Kyle, greetings once again to everyone out there at the Greater TFMR. It is Thursday. It is noon Eastern. So you know what that means. It's time for A to A. A to A is short for Access to Access, your weekly webinar, where we use the GoToWebinar platform for you to listen in and ask questions of movers and shakers in the precious metal sector. Ask those questions in real time. Today, your guest is someone we're all familiar with, Bill Murphy. He is the chairman of GATA. He's also the editor, publisher of his own site, great site, lametropolecafe.com. And so it's a real treat to get a chance to visit with Bill, especially here at this moment in time. Bill, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Craig. Great to be back.
Bill, before we get started, I was just reading this morning that earlier this week, you and Chris Powell had a chance to head up north of the border and attend what almost seemed like a retirement dinner, a roast or something like that in the Toronto kind of financial sector, financial industry, a retirement dinner for Eric Sprott, who is kind of retiring, and we did that a couple years ago. He's still around, obviously, and working for our cause, but I bet it was a great fun. What can you share from that night?
Oh, boy, it was the best, and it was actually given by Sprott, Inc., for Eric as a tribute and for his life and accomplishments and all he's done. There was about 200 people there from all over the world, and it was a spectacular event with all kinds of pictures throughout his life going up there and speakers that were really terrific, and we were honored by Eric. He had some fun. He introduced us both and Chris Powell and myself, and he then had some fun with another table with the World Gold Council people. Ian Telfer and Pierre Lassonde were there, and had some fun with that, and then there later on he even mentioned he can't wait to have a get together at our next GATA dinner when we're not griping. And he's just a remarkable man, as nice as can be, as you well know, and hasn't changed a bit. And yes, he's retiring from Sprott, but he's not retiring from aggressively buying up all kinds of assets in the ground, and maybe as aggressive as he's ever been in his whole life. So retiring is only from Sprott, and I talked to my friend John Embry, and we think that Eric, when gold and silver do what we know is coming, he'll probably be the richest man in Canada.
Yeah, I would imagine that's correct, and certainly about the nicest man in Canada, and I'm sure that was great. But did you have a chance to kind of go over and nudge Pierre in the ribs a couple of times or anything like that?
Did you interact? I would have loved to. I could, for some reason, I didn't want to go over the top on the thing. I would, because I wanted to actually meet him, but I did talk to Ian Telcher quite a bit, and we had a very cordial conversation, and of course the Gold Council and what they do and their establishment ties, it's we're persona non grata. One of my favorite stories is we went to the World Gold Council, John Embry, Chris Powell, and myself, in 2010, when we were having a big dinner over there, and we wanted to go see the World Gold Council. Said they would see us, so we get there, and the only way we could get up to see the head guy at the time was we had to sign a document that we were never there in the first place.
Oh, jeez.
You can't make this stuff up. I mean, we're trying to help their industry, and it's so bad we have to say we were never there. I mean, I could talk about it now, who cares, but we didn't for a while.
Isn't that remarkable? I mean, would it not help their shareholders and everybody else if the shackles were taken off and the manipulation ended, but that they want to pretend like they don't even know who you are?
That's right, and I'm prejudiced, of course, but it is the key issue in the gold and silver market. That is number one. If that was resolved, everything would change. I mean, when one of my favorite people I've looked up to all over the years is James Turk, and he mentions that if gold had kept up with inflation all these years, it would be $3,300 an ounce. Nothing special, just kept up with inflation. That's how undervalued it is.
And you would sure think that the mining companies and all of the rest that the World Gold Council represents, you'd think they'd find that positive to have it be $3,300.
And yes, you're absolutely right, Craig. And what we say is, because it's coming, it will blow up. I mean, it's just taking forever. The most important thing to stay in the game and not quit gold and silver is to know how artificially low the prices are because of what I call the gold cartel is doing. Yeah. You know that, because when this changes, it's going to be dramatic. This is just my opinion. We're not going a gradual moves up anymore that we did in the beginning, the turn of the century. That's history. When we go now, they lose control or something changes, the moves up are going to be spectacular, and there's no reason they can't approach the kind of euphoria going on in the Bitcoin world and cryptocurrency world.
Yeah, once the banks are out of the picture, at least. What, Bill, we're in the midst of just the same old, my friend. You and I have seen this. I don't even care to think about how many times we've seen this now. The market banking, if you want to call them that, bullion banks, ran up open interest in COMEX digital gold by over 20% as a way of capping the first quarter rally. They ran up the open interest in COMEX digital silver by 50%. And now we're in the process of washing all that spec back out. Is that how you see where we are at present?
Yeah, this is something else. I mean, I think, what has J.P. Morgan won 17 times in a row getting specs out of the market over the past 6 years? I mean, it's really the, you know, I'm really focused on silver because it's something different. Even now, the gold open interest is coming down. The specs are getting out as normal. And we've seen it a million times, and even but the gold price itself has had some updates. But silver, as you mentioned, straight down. I think it was down 3 weeks in a row, and every single
days.
Day, the one up day was 2 cents. The open interest washed out about 158,000 at the end of last year at the bottom, then went back up, as you mentioned, to an all-time high of around 235,000. Started to washed out a decent amount, although still above the old prior all-time highs prior to last year, and now starting to go up again. It just went up 10,000 contracts. Now, the reason I'd like to get into that is because, for me, it's hope trade, because you never know that something different is going on. That J.P. Morgan, with all the, you know, the talk of their supposedly holding some physical gold in the COMEX and this and that, and then it's another long story, that they've made this thing so egregious, so bad on the downside, and ruined the sentiment so much that the specs, they did not go short at the end of the last round like they know, a lot of times they do, that they now are attracting the specs going short at around the cost of production, around $16 an ounce above that, and so that they can, you know, get out of their short positions. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I'm hoping that we're, after this incredibly long, sustained period of bearishness and terrible prices, that it's leading to something that's going to be different, and we're going to get the big move that many of us are waiting for. You know, we mentioned Eric Sprott, and I'm still an Eric Sprott fan. He's my hero. But he's still looking for $100. He just doesn't know when. And Eric's going to be right. And I'm hoping that this is the beginning of the end of the last hurrah or something of what J.P. Morgan has orchestrated all these years.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, again, we use this platform so that you can ask questions yourself directly of Bill on your GoToWebinar control panel. There's a questions tab. You click it. A little dialog box opens up. You type in your question. It comes to me, and I will relay it to Bill in due time. But first, before we get there, Bill, I thought I'd just lay two statements that I've often made upon you, and I just want to get your thought, because you've been at this a lot longer than I have. I almost say that regrettably in your case. I mean, my gosh, you've been at this a long time. I don't know how you've been able to do it. However, that said, I want to draw upon your experience and your wisdom to see what you think of these two things. One, I've often stated that the precious metals are priced as if physically they are abundant. And to me, that's not the case. What's abundant is the derivative, all of the virtual forms, but the metal itself is not abundant. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, for me, as a, you know, I used to be a decent-sized futures trader and stuff, and that was a background I've had. What's disconcerting, what I don't quite understand yet, because it's run by, as you're saying, the paper market, the derivatives market. At the same time, at the end of the day, how they're able to do this, you know, you have the physical market trades every day. We know that, you know, the fixes in London and so on, that's where PM fixes, silver market, where a lot of the pricing is done for producers and so on. What intrigues me is how have they been able to do this, and no doubt about it, via the derivatives market. And this physical market, never seizes up against it. That's what I don't understand, and how they've been able to do that. I mean, it just, you keep thinking they're going to hit the wall, and that, you know, demand pictures and, you know, in China and in India and various places and other countries are going to register, and it doesn't. In that regard, I know that the physical demand in the United States is about as low as it's ever been. It just totally collapsed because we've been, one, too long in a bear market, and two, you've got other assets, real estate, again, mentioned the cryptocurrencies, the stock market. Everyone's, you know, happy as can be. And you go to the gold silver world, and it's angst.
Yeah.
And it's taken its toll.
That gives me, I'm going to use that as a segue into question number two, or I guess statement number two, and see what you can add to this. I started, I guess, postulating this maybe a month ago on a couple of different interviews where people were interviewing me, and I said, you know, I'm starting to wonder if 2016 wasn't like the kind of the straw that broke the back of a lot of precious metals investors. You know, a lot of folks rode things down. They thought they had a handle as to why things were going down. It looked like we'd hit a bottom in not only the metals but in the shares in late 2015. Then we had this massive run-up. And it almost seemed like, Bill, nobody was buying it on the way up. You know, it's like, oh, I don't believe it. I've seen this before. You know, and pretty soon the HUI index had doubled or almost tripled. And gold had gone from 1,060 to 1,360. And I think it was only right last summer when some of the people that had held in there all this time finally started getting excited again, maybe bought some more shares, maybe bought some more metal, and then smash late last year. And I just kind of had the feeling that that finally just crushed sentiment once and for all. And so in the end, Bill, as we're, you know, we've always talked about capitulation being a price, you know, that gold's going to go down in the triple digits and silver's going to go to the single digits, and that's going to be capitulation, and capitulation only comes with price. And I wonder if instead, because price is often confused with sentiment. Yeah, sentiment would be terrible if price went down, but really, to me, capitulation is sentiment. Do you think, I mean, this is obviously a little lengthier statement than what I would usually put it, but do you think that's what we're seeing? Are you seeing that across the board, that maybe we finally reached a point where people have thrown up their hands and said, I just don't want to deal with this anymore? Because frankly, from a contrarian standpoint, that'd be a good sign.
It's, if we're not there, we're getting pretty close, Craig. I've never seen anything like it, and it's because it's one, as the things I mentioned earlier, and what's going on in related markets, and it's been too long that we've gone through this, and it well put about, you know, last year was finally going to change, and it went right back, collapsed again, and yes, I think in terms of people quitting in a contrarian standpoint, this is here. I know for me, one of my observations, and it's strictly my own opinion, but I think that they were petrified about Trump winning the money and power, winning. There wasn't anyone who was saying he would be bullish for the stock market before. No one thought he could win. And then when there was a sign he could win, the Dow futures got clobbered. And then it goes straight up in one of the biggest moves in history. And I think they got all the big money and power in the banks and said, we've got to go change perceptions and take things into a new zone because we're afraid what could be happening in the real world. And I think after what you were talking about, that was the final blow for what would happen last year, as you just got into. And that just, you know, now it's just gotten people saying, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
And from a contrarian standpoint, of course, that is the point. But it's gone on a long time now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you're right. We talk about that here at the site all the time. I mean, it was instant back in November. I mean, it was the day after the election. It went from, oh boy, Trump win would be a disaster. All of a sudden, you get this narrative just shoved down your throat about how great it's going to be with infrastructure spending and tax cuts and all the, and what? Where was this last week?
Well, thank you. Exactly. Didn't anyone, I mean, this is what, I mean, I don't hear talked about that much, but it was just like everything changed. It was like, it was just the most orchestrated thing I've ever seen. If someone had said Trump could never win, but if he ever did, because of what he's saying, it would be great for the market. Boy, this would make total sense. But that's not what anybody said.
Right.
I mean, nobody.
Exactly.
And still nothing's happened.
Well, that's right. And nothing, it looks like the way he's painting himself into a corner politically, nothing's going to happen. They're not meeting infrastructure spending this year. They're not meeting tax reform this year. You'd be lucky to do anything this year.
That's right. And this is exactly the kind of thing they were afraid of and why they jacked it up in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you read about all the insider selling and all that kind of stuff, and it almost seems like 2007, 2008 all over again. You know, the last bit of retail investors are going to come in thinking it's a layup, and then they're going to be the ones holding the bag.
Well, that would be typical, wouldn't it?
It sure would. All right, I've got a couple of questions in queue, Bill, so we might as well go to them. And anybody else wants to ask anything of Bill, just type it in and we'll relay it. First question comes from Ted. And as I read Ted's question, it kind of reminds me of when I first got to really know Andrew McGuire back in 2012. He had this idea that he could start a trading service. If everybody would follow his advice and follow his trades, that we could make enough money, enough fiat every month to then cash it out and buy physical and force deleverage upon the banks and use their knowledge of the manipulation against them. And that's kind of what Ted is saying. He said, what do you think about all of us in the sector changing our strategy from trying to beat the manipulators to joining them? I mean, we know how it works, basically. So by keeping a core position and utilizing cot positioning from a trading position, could you, I guess, make enough fiat, convert it into physical, and take it out of their hands? I'm not sure we'd have the scale to do it, but Ted wants to know what you think of that idea.
Well, it's a great point, Ted. And I mean, having traded quite a bit back my old day, I think I wore my trading hat out. But all I know is the time that I would finally go do that now, and you're finally going to go, okay, we're going to go with the bad guys. That's when the game changes and all the things we've been waiting for, the mega moves coming. And I'm really reached the stage now where I'm in this game for the last hurrah in terms of the upside and a home run, in the sense of Eric Sprott is going to be right about $100 silver. Of course, it could go much higher than that and so on. And gold's going to take out the old highs, and it's going to be something dramatic. And it's, we haven't had a black swan or any kind of outside market event to shake up the markets. And the people that are against us have had their way, and I just think it's going to happen this time out of nowhere. And it's as I mentioned earlier, we're not going to have the gradual move up again this time. It's going to be just explosive. And if you're not in there, it's going to be very hard to get on board. And on what normally happens at a time like this, that's when the momentum traders, who don't have any history like many of us do, just will get on board. Hey, I see what's coming. I'm going to pay up. And then, of course, they make a fortune. Not always, but I mean, that's how it works. Whereas the people that are in and out and trading, all of a sudden we're going with them, we think we know what we're doing, the next thing you know, we're caught in the wrong side or not on board.
Yeah.
Because we've been so used to corrections, we don't want to pay up. Get out of something at 5, you don't want to pay 10 all of a sudden, get back in.
Right.
It goes against human nature. So, again, a very good question, and something we probably should have done a long time ago.
But that's the hard part, like you said, is the trading aspect and getting wrong-footed too many times, I suppose, too. The next question, kind of segue a little bit into that, comes from Alex. And he just wants to know what you think of, I don't know if you've seen Ted Butler's, do you follow Ted Butler's research?
I don't, subscribe to it, but okay. I see it up on the internet, and I do read it, yes.
Here's basically, let me kind of surmise a little bit as I see it. We've watched the house account of J.P. Morgan has, they didn't even have a silver vault in 2011. So they were just getting squeezed without any silver. And then remember they got the vault approved right away, like the next month in June of 2011.
I'd like to hear more from you on that, because that's one of my things. In 2011, the open interest, we're talking about that, was about 133,000 the whole way
right.
up. 133,000. It never went up.
Right.
J.P. Morgan either let it go or was forced to let it go. We don't know. One of the two was. It's my opinion that that's when they decided, or whatever they were doing, they were buying physical silver all the way up. Sounds like a loser, but no, all the way up, and then going mega short near the end in the derivatives market, 2 to 3, 4 times as much on the short side. It made a fortune on the way down. I've had the physical silver ever since to bomb the market whenever they wanted to.
Well, and so that's what Ted thinks, because we've watched every single month the house account, the proprietary account of J.P. Morgan. And again, to the extent that, you know, this information that the CME provides is reliable, nonetheless, every month the house account of J.P. Morgan over the last couple of years has averaged at least 1,000 contracts. I think the average is like 1,200 contracts per delivery month of silver. So whatever that is, 6 million ounces, I guess, and this month, they've not stopped a single one, none at all. It's very unusual. And so Ted's basic idea is that he thinks they've covered all their shorts, and they're not stopping COMEX contracts because they're done, and now they've just got their silver, and they're going to stand aside in the next rally. I think that, to me, sounds like a little...
I'm not quite sure I understand that in the sense that why wouldn't they just keep taking it if we think we know it's coming and, you know, take in silver at 16?
That's
it doesn't
what I'm
make.
Saying.
I don't understand it. So, I mean, it hasn't done anything to the market in years. It hasn't meant a thing. But if they really believe this is the end game and are pulling the plug, which of course I would love to see, we all would. Why wouldn't they just continue if they're stopping silver for their own account? Why don't they just keep doing it?
I know. That's just it. To me, it seems like kind of pie in the sky. And all of a sudden, hey, they're going to be done. It's too easy to sit there and issue 20,000 new shorts while price, you know, is and hold price stable, and then wash everybody back out and make yourself $100 million. You know.
Well, all I can say is what we keep waiting for is when we don't understand where the physical silver has come from these past many months and even years. That they're hitting the wall, that they can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And we like to call in our Gata camp, James McShirley does such a great job for us. You know, he's labeled the silver as the kryptonite of the gold cartel. In other words, because at some point, they're just going to not be able to supply the market or hit it and so on. That's what I was mentioning earlier. At some point, the physical price has got to react against the derivative price.
Right. Well, and I figured that was the direction we'd go with that question, so I'm going to double back then to a different question that I have because I think it's a great segue. This comes from Joe, who just says, some of us hold precious metals as insurance against a breakdown of the financial system and political system, and we have our doubts, though, that the powers that be will ever let the true price of gold be known to the public. They own the media and the exchanges. Would Bill please comment as to his thoughts regarding the possibility, I guess the possibility of this never ending, of this being endless and infinite?
Well, it's as my colleague Chris Powell spooked a little bit, I'm convinced that they're just going to hit the wall. You're going to get a black swan. Things are going to happen. We talked about the contrarian situation right now. You know, when people... I mean, historically, when you just give up that something can never happen that we've been waiting for all this time, that's usually the leading to a time when it does. And I think you were talking earlier about the supply, you know, the supply-demand theoretically, or what we think we know, is much better than it's being portrayed, whether it's all this hypothecation of the gold contracts and in silver, and it's overspoken for, and there isn't the physical supply around as being portrayed. So when all of a sudden things happen that overwhelm the investment world, we'll go from the outhouse to the penthouse in the sense of right now everything is so bad, and then it would take that bigger thing, but all of a sudden everybody wants gold and silver and they can't get it.
Yeah.
And there's no offers.
Right. And even in the paper market, Bill, geez, kind of like that first half of last year, there'll be some really big moves to the upside before anybody gets back on board. I mean, before all of a sudden, you know,
absolutely.
Things cook.
And if I may, in silver, of course, 1850 was the latest, you know, do not pass go sign, but that you got to get by above that now. But if we take out 21, I think the move will be historic. I honestly believe that, and if it doesn't, I'm just wrong. But I think you're going to see price moves on a day that will rival what the Bitcoin people are seeing.
I think that'd be fine with everybody. I have another question in queue that has to do with those class action lawsuits about silver and how it says here, you know, with those suits now moving into legal discovery for the first time, really, do you think those civil suits will finally have an impact on getting the banks out of the price manipulation in silver?
Oh, I don't know. There's no rule of law, and they have the government and the CFTC on their side. They just do whatever they want to do. To me, it's going to be the physical market that does it. But what I, you know, and the civil suits, they just take forever to materialize. But
yeah.
What I can say, which so is a big deal for me personally, and many in our camp, was to see the verbiage in the written statements and the audio stuff about what these traders were saying to each other about how rigging the price and what they were doing. So it's no longer guesswork on our part, or you know, conspiracy stuff. This has all been proven, and what in just one aspect of it, what they're doing. And it was just great to see, to put out in the public domain, because you just can't get around it. So the people saying, well, you know, they got it, folks, or you know, don't know what they're talking about. Well, I mean, it's it's there in black and white. I mean, this is what these bullion bankers were doing, and quite frankly, are still doing. I don't know, you know, how they communicate, but. It's remarkable, and I've always said that when this blows up, it will be the biggest financial scandal in U.S. history, and I don't know how long that's going to take.
Tying that back to the beginning, you got people at the World Gold Council staring straight at that information and saying, no, that's not right. This guy's not blue. No. Isn't that remarkable, isn't it?
Absolutely. I know that's what that Pierre Lassonde has said over the years. Oh, the central banks don't care about gold. Well, I mean, you've got to be kidding me. Look at what they did in the 60s and 70s and part of gold being part of our monetary foundation. And so, I mean, to make a statement like that is quite frankly silly.
Yeah, extraordinarily either uneducated and naive, and you wonder how the hell he ever got that job in the first place, either at his whatever that company is he runs or the World Gold Council, or he's just shilling. I mean, there's really no other explanation. Besides,
in my opinion, he's shilling, because he's a very smart man, and
has to be.
But so that leaves shilling.
Yeah, I've got one last question in queue. So if anybody else has a question for Bill, please type it in. And this one just actually is a personal question. Just wants to know how your health is these days. You had maybe some issues a couple years ago. How are you feeling these days?
Oh, feel great. It's I'm work out every day, and very fortunate to be on top of my game in that regard. And as you do get older, you know, you appreciate that. You know, we can always make the money, but getting your health back can be tough, and I never felt better.
Wonderful, because man, we need you in the fight, and we got to keep Chris's spirits up too. I sense him getting worn out from time. That might be a good gauge of sentiment as well. You know, just the I guess angst that comes through Chris's writing sometimes. It just seems like he's at the end of his rope.
Craig, he's just so disgusted because he's made an extra effort to contact the media and has them on the list and sent them stuff, and no matter what we present, they, you know, you can't get any place with these people. And we go to the industry, and we've had some great supporters, Seabridge Gold and Kirkland Lake and some other people, Sage Gold, but they're few and far between. And, boy, are these people special. It's frustrating when this is the biggest issue that these companies are facing. And no one's dealing with it, you know, outside of the likes of, like, an Eric Sprott.
Yep. No, and I sympathize with him. I had personally kind of a tough April because we sat there and chronicled for everybody here on the site. I wrote public articles all through the month of, I guess, late March and into early April, talking about how the bank, you know, J.P. Morgan, doing the same thing in silver again, running up the open interest. It was just a matter of time. And then to sit here and watch it happen and realize that I could sit here and warn everybody in advance, but yet I couldn't stop it. I mean, there's nothing I could do to stop it. Makes it all kind of seem irrelevant, but you got to keep fighting.
That's right. You know, while you're asking about questions, I've got one for you, because I've noticed what you're talking about, and I've seen in the price section between the yen and the gold price, which is fascinating. What I'm trying to figure out, because for me it's all about the gold cartel, is how this has occurred and what they've had the algo traders or the hedge funds, whatever you want to call them, involved in the yen gold trade, and do they use, because they're manipulating all the markets, we know what they're doing nowadays, using the yen to work on gold whenever they want. I mean, I watched, I saw how much they're in sync and the nice chart you put out, so I'd like to get your opinion.
I'm actually working on, I think the more I think about this, the more sense it makes, which in a sense is kind of disturbing, but I got an email, Ned Naylor Leyland, right?
Sure.
And Ned, he's like a friend at this point, and he sent me an email over the weekend and said, I just read something I want you to read. I got an idea for you on this yen trade. And essentially it's this, Bill, and the more I think about it, the more sense it makes, and that's what concerns me. He thinks that, that in making a market, if you will, because the idea used to be, that the shorts in the paper gold market were the producers, the actual miners themselves. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be in the futures markets, right? You got the producers on one side selling forward, and then you got the speculators taking the other sides of the trades, and that's what makes the market.
That's right.
But there are no producers that are hedging anymore, very, very few. And so therefore, the burden, if you will, of being the market maker and taking the offer side, the short side, has fallen to these bullion banks. And they obviously do it, for profit and to benefit the central banks. But nonetheless, that leaves them with this significant risk exposure. And the bankers and the traders want to be able to lay off that risk and hedge as much of it as possible. Well, to fully hedge these just massive metal short positions can't be done within the metal itself because the pool of possibilities for hedging just isn't deep enough. And so basically the theory is that Ned put forth, and then again, the more I think about it, the more I like it, is that it's the banks themselves, and maybe even the LBMA, that have built, financed, and run these HFT algos that have directly, and I mean one for one now, linked gold futures with the dollar yen. And from a hedging standpoint, from a risk management standpoint, they've essentially turned gold into the yen, which then if you can do that, now you can hedge your gold by hedging in the much deeper pool of yen. Does that make sense?
Well, very much so, especially the part you said about as a means of a hedge operation and what's going on here. It's just it's quite complicated to put it mildly in the sense of, again, how it relates to the gold cartel's activity and what goes on here, but it's certainly there's something to that. You can see that in your chart. It's pretty obvious.
I put one up yesterday for subscriber, Bill. It was just a percentage change over the last 12 months. And the yen, not the dollar yen as always quoted, but the yen dollar, the yen is down 4.5% over the last 12 months. Gold's down 4.3%. Well, there you go. I mean, that's about as tight of a correlation besides on a daily basis, but, annualized that you can find. So now you can just hedge the dollar yen and you're hedging your gold. And then it also gives you the ability, anytime the dollar yen is getting out of control, going down like it did last July, you just have one of these central bankers go out and talk it back up, whether it's Kuroda, Draghi, whomever.
Well, that's true. But in here would be my point. At some point when it gets to our physical tightness in gold and silver, or something occurs and our markets go nuts, that kind of a trade can be part of the reason that our gold and silver markets blow up. That they just,
exactly.
There's something that correlation which holds so well then completely falls apart, and these people are slaughtered because of a dysfunctional situation that occurs that no one is expecting.
But in the meantime, the banks, as you said, all they really have to do then is somehow find flows on almost a daily basis to meet the physical bids at whatever price is determined by the yen trade. And then it leaves you at that. And what I guess is disheartening about it, as I said, is the idea that if this is true, then gold is just a yen pair trade. And as the yen fluctuates, the dollar yen fluctuates from 125 down to 100, then gold fluctuates from 1100 to 1400. And that's all that ever happens. And it's almost like it's pegged again,
Well, it's. I understand where you're coming from, or where other people are coming from. All I can say is, this goes back at some point. It's going to blow up, and it will happen, and it'll come out of nowhere. And that's what we go back to silver again. Let's say they're able to do that with gold. Well, at some point, if they're running out of the physical silver, there's no offers, and they have to cover. And that's what we're hoping is, what I'm hoping anyway, is going to occur. That's why I'm looking at what's going on right now as a potential hope trade ending thing. I don't know if that's true or not. There's no way to know. But it's something to look at that is different. And like you say, what we need now is something different because the status quo stinks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, while we've been adding this on, I've gotten just two other quick questions for you that have come in from listeners. You have a sec?
Sure.
Okay. Dan wanted to know if you think there's a rationale, or if you can explain, I think it is James McShirley that always talked about the 1% cap rule.
Yep.
Sometimes, and then it goes to 2%. Can you add any flavor to that? Do you think that's
We often notice there's a lot of things that they change over the years. The gold cartel rules. You know, it used to be 2% up. You know, 1%, 2% sideways down. And lately, there's been a correlation between going up, 1%, and gold up 10,000 contracts in open interest, and basically that this is how they move into action. And we've watched them go into different things over the years. I mean, it used to be around 3 a.m. New York time, they would hit it all the time, and then after the p.m. fix. And they move on to different things back and forth. So basically, we're just still in a lockdown situation. And that's, again, we're looking for, quote, the change.
Yep. All right, I got one last question for you, and this is almost a final four type question. So in a sense, we're going to have a final five, I guess. But this one comes a follow-up from Ted. He just wants to know that when you played for the Boston Patriots, for anybody that doesn't know this, Bill actually spent a season as a wide receiver with the Patriots back
in... Yeah, we started for 1 year. That was it, but it was a fun
69?
Year.
1969, right?
68, unfortunately, 68.
You played at the same time as Johnny Unitas and Joe Willie Namath and some other great legendary players back then.
Yeah, I've met Joe Namath a few times. He's a great guy, and it was a great experience. And I wish we could get at winning ways like the Patriots have done these recent years.
Man, I tell you. Well, anyway, Ted wants to know, what was your 40 time back in the day? Did you keep track of that?
You would have to ask that, Ted. I was one of the – I mean, I could catch anything. I never missed anything, but I was so slow. I was like 4'8", 4'9". And they had linemen that are 350 pounds run faster than that today.
And I remember Fred Biletnikoff from back in the day. Man, he had that stick-em all over everything. Did you have a little stick-em going?
No, I didn't have it then, but he was my hero. And all I'll do is remember, I'll leave it at that. But my first game, I was playing, I was the end for the Patriots, and Lance Allworth of the San Diego Chargers was the all-pro guy was their thing. And I caught more passes he did that day. I think it was downhill from there on in, but it was a real thrill, and at least you know what it's like, and playing at Fenway Park back then, and it was quite an experience, and I'll never forget it, obviously.
How about your knees and your back these days? They hanging in there?
I'm working out every day, and knock on wood, there's always something, but they're fine.
All right, that leads us to the final four, because we've cleared out the queue. So if you're ready, we'll wrap up by just these four fun, quick questions. You can answer with a sentence or maybe just a couple of words. Can I hit you with them?
Sure, Craig.
All right, first question deals with your Patriots. Is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback of all time?
No doubt, and the combination with Belichick is without a doubt the greatest combination of one guy and a coach of all time.
Fair enough. I think most people know how I feel now. I was in Vegas for the Super Bowl, and I had a significant wager, an ounce of gold style wager on the Patriots, and I had given up in the third quarter, and I was like, man, what a drag. So I ended up coming home with this wad of cash in my pocket. So I bought all new golf clubs so far this year. Well, without the driver, putting my Tom Brady money to work. So I've definitely been Tom.
Good for you. Better to be lucky than good at the end, as they say.
That's right, and I have my Tom Brady golf club now, and I wouldn't have him without him. Okay, number two, again, I guess we'll call you a child of the 60s, my friend. Rolling Stones or Beatles?
Rolling Stones. Fantastic.
I thought maybe that's the direction you would go. All right, In terms of black swan events, a lot of people looking at North Korea. They've been blustering now for almost 70 years. Will that be a big issue in 2017, or will that just go to the sidelines again?
In my opinion, geopolitical events, because of what the gold cartel does, have had little effect on markets ever. Even if they go up within a day or two, they take it right down because they don't want it ever to mean anything. So I think our black swan is going to be in the derivative issue, and we have a nuclear kind of explosion.
In the derivative issue?
Yep. Some derivatives blow up where it feeds on itself.
Yeah, gotcha. That kind of nuclear explosion. All right.
Yes.
And lastly, again, just the first thing that comes to mind, okay? Let's just say you wake up one morning. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. You wake up one morning, you pour yourself a cup of coffee, you open up your computer, and you see that it is the entire paper gold thing is blown up, and there are no offers in paper gold. What's going to be your initial reaction? What's the first thing you're going to do?
Big smile on my face.
Kind of sit back, put your hands behind your head, lean back in your chair, and smile?
Absolutely. I mean, we want everyone else to do well. What is not fair is we're being crooked.
Yeah.
And we're all sick and tired of it. And we want, you know, we want things to be, you know, at least to be fair and open and free. And that's where God has come from all these years. So when these people blow up, and if the big banks and some of these people doing it get wiped out, I could care less.
Right. All right, my friend. Before we go, everybody knows about GATA and everything that you guys do there, but tell everybody a little bit about La Metropole Cafe, because that's been around for a long time, and it is a wonderful site. Can you, I guess, sell that a little bit for everybody?
Well, thanks. Sure. I started in 1998, and it was 3 or 4 months before GATA, and my colleague Chris, I was complaining about, was obviously, you know, being a former trader, the markets were rigged, and it was after long-term capital management blew up, and we know that the Fed came in and all the big banks got together to prevent them. They took out their short positions. They were short some 400 tons or so of gold, and whether it was for Italy or not, nobody knows. But they had to cover it, so they got taken off their hands. And I said, this market's rigged. And that's how I got started. So I talk about the gold and silver markets and other financial markets and put some other stuff up, and been at it a long time. And as I say, my goal is to sail off into the sunset when gold and silver are going bonkers, and the people that have paid attention to what I've had to say these years are all going to have their own big smiles on their face, and that's the way, you know, a good way to go out.
What's the subscription cost, Bill?
It's $2.99 a year, and they say I've been doing it a long time, and thanks for asking, and congrats on your work and all you do, and I thank you for having me on this program, and I can't wait to celebrate one day instead of, as Eric Sprott said, you know, griping.
Well, look, I wouldn't be here without all the bellwether stuff that you and Chris have done over the years. So please, everybody, support GATA, support La Metropole Cafe if you can. And, Bill, please, don't give up the fight. We need you out there. You are right on the front lines doing the important work, and we are all in your debt.
All right. Well, thank you, Craig, and I'll love to chat again, as I said, hopefully to do a little more high-fiving.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. All right. Well, thank you, Bill, and thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will have another one of these maybe as soon as next week. Have a great day.